In planning for the summer of 1893, another holiday tour in the Japanese Alps, three expeditions stood out prominently before my mental vision as affording the greatest promise of interesting exploration. These were crossing of the Harunoki Toge in the northern portion of the range, the ascent of Kasadake in Hida, and that of Horakayama on the border of Hida and Shinshu. The Harunoki Pass had not for many years been crossed by foreign travelers, though I knew of several parties that had made the attempt. Kasadake and Horaka also were still untrodden summits as far as foreigners were concerned, and even the people who know them the best by sight seemed to have such a wholesome respect for their formidable appearance that they were not anxious for closer acquaintance. The best way of reaching the Harunoki Pass is from Zenkoji on the Karazawa-Naotsu Railway. On the whole, it reminded me of a combination of a Swiss mountain line and part of that between Genoa and Spezia. The 26 tunnels we went through gave one the feeling of passage from end to end of some gigantic flute. The journey, a dozen miles, occupied 70 minutes, and as the engine was behind us, we could keep the windows open without the risk of asphyxiation. The average inclination is moderately steep, the greatest gradient being 1 in 15. A sweltering hot afternoon, 90 degrees in the shade, saw the train rattling down the long incline to Zenkoji after a 3-hour run from Karuazawa. Under the shadow of the dark hills, the great temple that gives the place its ancient name looks over the mouse-coloured roofs of the houses to the fertile plain beyond. The word Zenkoji represents the Chinese characters which stand for the Japanese words rendered the Temple of Yoshimitsu, its name it gets from the builder of the original shrine, on the site of which the present erection stands. Its raison d'etre is the preservation of a golden image representing the Buddha and two of his followers, Kanon and Daishi Bosatsu, which is said to have been fashioned by Sakyamuni, the Buddha himself 3,000 years ago, from gold found at the center of the universe. The strange adventures through which the image is said to have passed begin with its journey from Korea, when Buddhism was first introduced through that country into Japan in the middle of the 6th century AD. The opposition of the priests of Shinto, the native faith, made it the object of continuous persecution, but each fresh attempt to destroy or make away with it failed. Once an effort was made to burn it, another time to cut it to pieces, and twice it was thrown into Ajikawa near Osaka. At last it fell into the hands of Yoshimitsu, a native of Shinshu, who carried it off to his native province, where it found a resting place in the original temple he erected himself. The name Zenkoji thus represents the religious associations of the place, whilst the official title of the town, Nagano, has reference to it as the capital of the ken or country, which is coextensive with the province of Shinshu. The image is enshrined in a recess, covered with magnificent brocade curtains at the back of a sort of chancel in the hondo or main building. No one is allowed to see more than the outermost of the next of the boxes in which it is enclosed. Hello and welcome to Snow Country Stories Japan. I'm your host, Peter Carnell, a tour guide and writer based in Nagano, and this is a podcast all about life and travel in Japan's legendary Yukiguni. This isn't a podcast that spends a lot of time exploring the cities of Japan. In fact, one of the reasons behind starting it was to take listeners outside of the sprawling mass of Tokyo, Osaka, Nagoya, and into the regions of Japan that relatively few international visitors or foreign residents spend time in. But in today's episode, we'll be heading into a city, but a small one, in exploration of Nagano. The abridged reading you just heard is taken from the 1896 publication, Mountaineering and Exploration in the Japanese Alps, by Reverend Walter Weston, accounting for his arrival in Nagano City and its famous temple of Zenkoji, en route to further exploration of the surrounding mountains. Nagano City is the largest city in Nagano Prefecture, a mountainous prefecture that boasts many of Japan's highest peaks. Much like the 19th century, Nagano City remains a hub for visitors heading into the mountains of this area of the snow country, including today its many ski resorts. Multiple national parks, the famous snow monkeys, the Tatsuyama Kurobe Alpine Route, and more are all readily accessible from Nagano City. For that reason, Nagano City is often, if not primarily, regarded as a transit point providing access to the mountains and snow country, but in today's episode we'll explore the history and highlights of the city itself in an effort to answer the question, what does Nagano City have to offer in its own right? As a tour guide, I know the city pretty well, and over time it has occurred to me that Nagano is a city, I guess like all cities, of connected yet also disparate stories and entwined histories competing for our attention. As a guide, it's my job to help untangle those histories for my guests and construct coherent, and I hope entertaining, narratives, and in trying to do that, I notice something about Nagano. It is a city, the most interesting elements or stories of which are in some way hidden, intentionally. That means we have to work a little harder to find them, and I think that actually sums up Nagano, a city which is small and at first appearance does not have the attractions of other cities. And what it does have, has to compete with what's just outside the city in terms of the snow, ski resort, mountains, all that good stuff. This guide includes the highlights of Nagano City, along with popular day trips, where to stay, how to get there, and of course, if you're so inclined and not totally put off by this podcast, I provide information about my tours and services as a guide. Worth pointing out that each episode of the podcast has chapter markers allowing you to skip to the specific sections, and there's links to everything we discuss in the show notes and on the episode page of the Snow Country Stories Japan website, snowcountrystories.com. I hope you enjoy it. Nagano City is the capital city of Nagano Prefecture and lies approximately 240 kilometers. That's around 150 miles to the northwest of Tokyo. Thanks to the very speedy Hokuriku Shinkansen originating from Tokyo Station, the journey to Nagano takes only 80 to 110 minutes depending on which service you choose. A much easier train journey, though no doubt a less beautiful one than the mountain railroad referenced in Walton's 19th century account. All Hokuriku Shinkansen services departing Tokyo stop at Nagano. It's direct. No transfers are needed, so no excuse not to come. If you've never been to Japan but have heard of Nagano, or it rings a bell in some way, that's almost certainly because of the 1998 Winter Olympics. Nagano hosted the 98 Winter Games, followed by the Paralympic Winter Games in February and March 1998, respectively. Nagano's role as host of the Winter Olympics underscores that it has lots of ski resorts and world-class snow. 14 venues in Nagano were used, including purpose-built stadiums and facilities in the city, and ski resorts in Hakuba, Shikokogen, Nozawa Onsen, Izunakogen, and Karawazawa. For visitors heading to Nagano City, the Nagano Olympic Memorial Arena, simply referred to as M-Wave, hosted speed skating events during the games and today remains an ice skating rink and houses the Nagano Olympic Museum. Olympic courses at the host ski resorts are also marked, allowing skiers and snowboarders to see how they stack up against the very best. You can expect snow in Nagano anytime from mid to late November until the end of March, with January and February being the most likely time you'll experience consistent and heavy snow. In lots of ways, the Olympic Games put Nagano on the international map, but for centuries before, and I think for most Japanese today, Nagano is known first and foremost as home to one of Japan's oldest, largest, and most important Buddhist temples. When I first moved to Japan, someone told me that there are two types of towns here, temple towns and castle towns. Known as monzen machi in Japanese, temple towns are those which are dominated by an important temple or temples, which bestow a lot of power to the resident monks and nuns. Nagano is one such town. Established in 642, Zenkoji is one of the oldest and most important Buddhist temples in Japan. The city grew around the temple, with many sub-temples established in close proximity to it, reflecting the importance of Zenkoji, which to this day remains one of the most famous and significant temples in the country. But what makes it so? To explain that, we need to go back to the 6th to 8th centuries, during the Asuka period, when Buddhism was first emerging in Japan, having arrived via Korea and then China. At that time, so it is said, the first statue of the Buddha was brought to Japan from Korea. The statue depicts the Amida Nyorai, the historical Buddha, the man whose teachings Buddhism stemmed from, flanked by two attendants, two bodhisattva, or in Japanese bosatsu. The introduction of a foreign religion was met by resistance, and as the opening reading accounted for, the statue was defaced and thrown into a river. There it lay, like the ring on the riverbed, awaiting or perhaps beckoning someone to salvage it. My precious. That person was a samurai by the name of Honda Yoshimitsu, who discovered, rescued, and brought the statue to his home in Nagano, which became the first temple in dedication to it in the year 642. Since that time, almost 1400 years, a temple has stood in one form or another in dedication to the statue, said to be housed in the main hall. I say said to be, as we are not allowed to view it for ourselves. No one is. It is hidden from view. The same statue that Walton referenced in his 19th century account as off-limits remains hidden from us today. Legend tells us that the statue communicated with Honda Yoshimitsu, declaring that it must be hidden from human eyes for the rest of history. Kept in a box for its protection, we cannot see it. Indeed, we typically cannot even see the box, yet we can get close to it by descending a tunnel underneath the temple, a darkened tunnel, completely dark, that runs underneath the temple below the altar. The darkness represents our death, and as we move back toward the light, our rebirth, there is a physical object in the tunnel that marks the point you are beneath the statue, and for those who find it, it is said to bring forward your enlightenment and your own Buddhahood. After all, Buddhists believe that ultimately, we will all become Buddhas ourselves. The Chinese characters for Zenkoji also translate as Virtuous Light Temple. Somewhat ironic that the treasure the Temple of Virtuous Light houses will spend the rest of human history hidden in the dark. Zenkoji is a non-denominational temple, meaning that it belongs to no one, or perhaps better said, it belongs to everyone. Everyone is welcome, regardless of faith and background. That openness is reflected in the daily practice of a morning ceremony called the Oasuji every day of the year, at which everyone is welcome. The time varies by season, but is around sunrise, any time from 5:30 a.m. to 7 a.m. I've included a link to the schedule on today's episode page. Given the temple's ongoing importance for many Japanese, including pilgrims, the streets surrounding aligned with shukubo, traditional temple lodgings. Anyone can stay in them, regardless of your faith or background, and they offer a tremendous way to extend your time at or understanding of Zenkoji. I'll come back to this later when I discuss accommodation in Nagano. To the same end, I offer private guided tours at Zenkoji, a destination I am very familiar with and love showing people around. I do so at a leisurely pace, with time to sit down for a decent coffee, lunch, local snacks, and should you be keen, a couple of drinks, including a guided sake tasting at a nearby brewery. Listen on for more details or use the chapter markers to skip to that section now. Zenkoji is around 20 minutes walk from Nagano Station, or less than 10 minutes using local bus services that operate outside the Zenkoji exit of the station. And now, let's head outside of the city center, but still within Nagano, and into the spirited forests of Togakushi. Part of Nagano City, the alpine village of Togakushi has an average elevation of around 1,200 meters, that's around 3,940 feet, and sits beneath the striking ridgeline of Mount Togakushi, 1,904 meters, or about 6,250 feet. Accessible by bus from Nagano Station in around 60 minutes, Togakushi is actually part of the city, and also the wider Myoko Togakushi Renzan National Park, and home to some of Japan's most important Shinto shrines and the Togakure School of Ninja. Translating as hidden door, Togakushi and its shrine complex are linked to the very creation myths of Japan and the story of Amaterasu, the sun goddess, and her retreat from the world and eventual re-emergence from hiding. One of my favorite destinations in the snow country, episode 12 of the podcast is my travel guide to Togakushi, so make sure to check that out if you haven't already. Five shrines make up the main complex at Togakushi. The Hokosha, lower shrine, Chusha, middle shrine, and Oksha, upper shrine are the largest and most commonly visited. The smaller Hinomikosha and Kuzurusha round out the main structures within the complex. When approaching from Nagano City, you will first come to the lower shrine, followed by the middle shrine located in the central village, and then onto the upper shrine. The approach to the upper shrine is without question the most famous feature in Togakushi, but not for the shrine itself. Around 15 to 20 minutes from the trailhead, the Zushimon is a large red gate which acts as an entrance to an avenue of grand cedars. With most estimated to be over 400 years old and some much older, the trees are immense and considered sacred in their own right. This spot is famous and highly photogenic and as such attracts plenty of visitors. Mount Togakushi has been a focal point of devotion for at least 1,000 years and likely 2,000. Densely forested and a place of deep cold and heavy snow in winter, it was long considered inhospitable, the Okuyama, deep mountains. It's the domain of bears and supernatural beings such as Tengu, the mischievous long-nosed or bird-beaked yokai, demons and powerful kami. It was a place that few humans ventured willingly, and when they did so, it was often to seek refuge and hiding. Known as Yamabushi in Japanese, mountain ascetics and followers of the syncretic Shugendo faith system, which blends Buddhism, Shintoism, Taoism, and folk beliefs, seek out the mountains to engage in ritual practice intended to bring on their spiritual death and rebirth. Though very real, they have long held an almost preternatural reputation in Japanese culture and are synonymous with Togakushi, the forest, caves, and mountains itself acting as a beacon for the Yamabushi, the story of whom is entwined with that of the Togakure School of Ninjutsu, which can be explored at the Togakure Ninpo Museum and Chibiko Ninja Mura, or Kids Village. As said, episode 12 of the podcast was my travel guide to Togakushi, so I won't go into full details here. Should you be interested in visiting, make sure to listen to that episode in which I discuss all this and more, including Togakushi Ski Resort, the nearest ski resort to Nagano City, the area's famous soba, Takezaiku, accommodation, and more. Whereas the ninja were about deception, trickery, and hiding in the shadows, their samurai counterparts, shall we say rivals, were all about fronting up at the agreed time, in the right gear, and having a proper dust-up. The story of feudal Japan cannot be told without accounting for its legendary warrior class, a history you can explore while in Nagano City by visiting the little-known neighborhood of Matsushiro. Only 30 minutes by bus from Nagano Station, Matsushiro is home to some very well-preserved samurai residences and other historically important buildings. But it's what lies beneath, hidden underneath this quiet pocket of the city, that makes Matsushiro such an intriguing destination. But let's come back to that. Under the control of the powerful Sanada clan during the Edo period, that's the 17th to late 19th centuries when Japan was at peace and under the control of the Tokugawa shogunate, Matsushiro was a samurai stronghold and remains a historically important enclave thanks to the preservation of multiple Edo period buildings. The Bunbu Literary and Military Arts School and former Sanada residence, built in 1855 and 1864 respectively, rank among the best preserved examples of such buildings in Japan, while the former Higuchi residence, the Yamadera Jōzan residence, and other original samurai homes are equally impressive, and although the original castle no longer stands, Matsushiro Castle Park includes reconstructed gates set up on the restored foundation walls, at its most beautiful in spring, when many cherry blossom trees within come into bloom. Matsushiro is a small place with each of these attractions and the Sanada Treasures Museum, which exhibits artifacts once belonging to the Sanada clan, within easy walking distance of each other. Matsushiro is, however, quite sleepy and otherwise anonymous, with the important heritage of the area not being fully capitalized on, nor is what lies beneath. On November 11th, 1944, around 9 months before Japan's surrender and the end of the Second World War, construction began on a subterranean facility that is today referred to as the Matsushiro Underground Imperial Headquarters. Hidden beneath and interconnecting between the small mountains of Mount Maizuru, Mount Saijo, Mount Minakami and Mount Zozan. The tunnels were intended to house the Japanese government and military leadership, critical government agencies, NHK, the Japanese broadcaster and telecoms, and the imperial family in the expected event of an invasion by Allied forces. Intentionally chosen due to its distance from the Pacific coast, where any invasion would likely come from, its mountainous topography that could negate the use of dive bombers, hardened rock it would hope would withstand bombardment by the American heavy bombers, and the general anonymity of the area, had history taken a different course, Matsushiro may well have been the site of the last stand of the Japanese Imperial forces. Their construction was a closely guarded secret, and little information about the tunnels is in the public domain. They were 75% complete, with digging continuing up to the day of surrender on August 15, 1945. It is estimated that between 7,000 to 10,000 labourers were used, the majority of whom were forced Korean labourers. Korean comfort women were also said to have been present. Conditions were harsh. Lack of heavy machinery and expertise meant the tunnels were created by blasting with dynamite and then digging out the rock fall by hand. Collapses were common. Working shifts were long, originally 8 hours and then extended to 12 hours. It is unknown how many labourers died. The estimates vary widely. Lack of official documentation means that rumours and fact about the tunnel are hard to separate. A 500-meter section of the tunnel underneath Mount Zozan, often referred to as the Zozan Tunnels, has been reinforced and is open daily from 9 to 5. Admission is free. It's important to set your expectations before going there. The tunnels are basically empty, there is very little information, and it goes without saying that visitors should of course be mindful of the sensitivity of such a place. But it is worth visiting and speaks to a hugely painful and important period of Japanese and global history that in many ways remains hidden from our view today. As a tour guide based in Nagano, it goes without saying that I guide in Nagano City, starting with my On the Trail of Japan's Seven Lucky Gods and Zenkoji private tour. Available all year round, I designed this tour to take you in search of Japan's Shichifukuji or Seven Lucky Gods, on a route that leads you through Nagano City to sub-temples and other spots of interest and eventually onto Zenkoji. Along the way, I introduce you to each of Japan's seven lucky gods, gods who play an important role here and embody everything you'd expect. Long life, fortune, beauty, contentment, wisdom, and more. And in doing so, touch on some surprising aspects of Japanese culture, including the fact that only one of the seven gods is actually from Japan. Once at the temple, we explore its history and significance, the whole story, including why Zenkoji has more swastikas than any other temple in Japan. While we walk, I also introduce you to favourite eateries and cafes. I prioritise leading you to a decent coffee, while sampling Nagano's food culture, and should you wish to, making sure we have plenty of time for lunch, a little shopping, and guided sake testing at a nearby brewery. The tour is private and available all year round. Check out the tour page on the Snow Country Stories Japan website for more information, including my Forest Shrines of Togakushi private tour, which I also discuss in my travel guide to Togakushi in episode 12, and the option of a fully customized one or multi-day tour with me. I'd love to be part of your travel experience. When it comes to the best time to visit Nagano, it depends on what you want to do. Zenkoji is of course accessible all year round. Togakushi is also an all year round destination, with each season offering a different experience, from the deep cold snow, snowboarding, skiing and snowshoeing of winter, to the hiking and mountaineering from late spring to autumn, including the exceptional beauty of its autumn colours. Set in the forest, the shrines have limited access in winter and are best enjoyed from spring to autumn. Matsushiro can be enjoyed any time of year, but it's at its best in the warmer months of the year, with its spring cherry blossom and autumn sanada festivals being highlights. Speaking of festivals, Nagano hosts events throughout the year. The largest festivals are in summer, July and August, while its most celebrated annual festival, the Ebisuko Fireworks, Japan's largest autumn fireworks display, takes place on the 23rd of November each year. But ultimately, Most visitors to Nagano are heading here en route to nearby destinations, including its many fantastic ski resorts. So in the end, the best time to visit is almost certainly dependent on what you plan to do around Nagano as much as what you plan to do in the city. Much like it was in 1896, Nagano City remains a convenient hub from where to head into the surrounding mountain ranges, including some of Japan's highest peaks and best ski resorts. Nagano Prefecture is home to many ski resorts, the most popular of which can be reached using bus and train services from Nagano Station. Outside of the east exit of the station, express buses run to Hakuba Valley in around 70 minutes and Shiga Kogen, also taking around 70 minutes to the nearest ski fields. If you're headed to Shiga, make sure to listen to episode 13, which is all about Shiga Kogen, Japan's largest and highest ski resort. To reach Nozawa Onsen, jump on the Shinkansen for the short 10-minute ride to the next station, Iyama Station, and then take the express bus from Iyama to Nozawa, another 30 minutes. Skiers and boarders heading to the resorts of Myoko can take the local Kita Shirano line from Nagano Station to Myoko Kogen Station, a journey of 45 minutes. The nearest ski resort to Nagano City, Togakushi, which is actually within the city boundary, can be reached in 60 to 70 minutes using local bus services that operate from outside the Zenkoji exit of the station. Outside of winter, most of those resorts operate gondolas and chairlifts that open up some fantastic hiking and an increasing array of green season activities. The ski resorts I've just mentioned sit in or on the border of national parks, including Chubu Sangaku, Japan's third largest national park, Joshinetsu Kogen, its fourth largest, and Myoko Togakushi Renzan, one of its newest. These parks include multiple mountain ranges, including the Hida or North Alps, Japan's highest mountain range that has many of Japan's highest mountains, including peaks of over 3,000, that's over 10,000 feet and above. There is much too much to discuss here, and I intend to dedicate episodes to each of these national parks in future. The parks can be reached using bus services from Nagano Station, although access points such as Matsumoto, Kadazawa, Joetsu Myoko, and Yuzawa might be more convenient depending on the specific area of the park you want to head to. I've included links to the official website of each park on today's episode page. Hugely popular in winter, Jigokudani Yan Koen, more commonly referred to as the Snow Monkey Park, is home to Nagano's famous hot spring loving monkeys. The monkeys are there all year round, and as I discussed in episode 16 of the podcast, My Guide to the Monkey Park, I think it's a better experience outside of winter. If you're keen to visit the monkeys, make sure to check out that episode. But regardless of when you choose to go, you can get there from Nagano Station using the Snow Monkey Express Bus, taking around 50 minutes, or use the Nagano Dentetsu train line to Yudonaka Station, around 55 minutes, and then take a short bus ride onto the park. For full details about how to get there, check out my travel guide to the Monkey Park. The castle town of Matsumoto is only 55 minutes from Nagano Station, using limited express services, or 110 to 120 minutes using local services on the Shirano line. Most famous for its grand six-story castle, one of the few remaining original castles in Japan, Matsumoto has some very nice historic shopping streets, a thriving art and traditional craft scene, and very good restaurants and decent nightlife. It's an all-year-round destination and an ideal day trip from Nagano City. Finally, the hugely popular Tateyama Kurobe Alpine route is accessible from Nagano Station, using bus services to Ogizawa Station at the base of the mountains. Open to the public from mid-April to the end of November, this is where you'll encounter the famous snow walls of Tateyama upon its opening in spring. I plan to dedicate an upcoming episode to the Alpine route, so I won't go into too much detail now. If you're interested in it or in any of the other destinations I've just mentioned, head to the episode page on the Snow Country Stories Japan website for links to each. When it comes to dining and nightlife in Nagano City, best to set some expectations. Let me be clear, it's not the most exciting city in Japan when it comes to eating out, drinking, busting up a dance floor with some ones and twos and getting in late. It's a small city that shuts down early and has limited dining options. But that's not to say that there's nothing on offer, and if Nagano City got its act together and embraced its traditional food culture, there's lots of potential. As a temple town in the snow country, it should come as no surprise that the traditional diet of Nagano has a strong emphasis on non-meat products and fermentation. Nagano is Japan's largest producer of miso, that's fermented soybean paste, and the second largest producer of sake, fermented rice alcohol. The cold climate and deep snow of winter, which results in a shorter growing season here, means fermentation has always played a big role in traditional food culture. As a landlocked prefecture, seafood must be brought in and in a town long dominated by its famous temple, meat has always been somewhat, and for long periods entirely, out of favor. The result of this is Nagano's traditional food culture is very well suited to vegetarians and vegans. I really do wish the city would embrace and promote this part of the story. It has huge potential. Soba, that's buckwheat noodles. Oyaki, baked or steamed rice flour buns with vegetable fillings. Tsukemono, pickled vegetables. Miso and sake are some of Nagano's most common staples. Located just off the main road, leading from the station to temple, Suyakame is one such restaurant I'd recommend to anyone wanting to buy high-quality miso, enjoy a miso-based meal, or try miso soft-serve ice cream. Sounds strange, eh? But trust me, think salted caramel. It's really, really good. When it comes to oyaki, that's the baked or steamed rice flour buns, I recommend the cozy Ogawa no Sho just down from the temple, where your oyaki will be cooked over an open charcoal fireplace, or you can choose to make your own. Or Iruhado, which I think are by far the best oyaki around, located on the shopping street inside the temple complex, with another outlet inside Nagano Station. The wonderfully generous and award-winning Nishimon Yoshinoya is your best option when it comes to sake. It's only a couple of minutes walk from the temple. Again, check out the episode page on the website for links to each. Given the mountainous character of Nagano, hunting has long been a traditional means of supplying meat. Known as jibie in Japanese, wild meat is served at many restaurants, including specialist restaurants in Nagano City. Shika, that's deer, kamo, duck, inoshishi, wild boar, kuma, bear, and other meats are available. I realize it isn't for everyone, but I'm a fan, so if you like that type of thing, I recommend trying jibie while in Nagano, as it is a traditional part of the diet. The other thing you might come across is basashi, horse, which is also part of the traditional diet of Nagano. This divides opinions, so all I'll say is that it's available at many local restaurants, including some specialist restaurants, if you're interested. You'll find the greatest concentration of all types of restaurants and bars outside of the Zenkoji exit of Nagano Station, with more dotted around the temple, although those around the temple often don't have a dinner service. At night, around the station is your best bet, with many chain izakaya and restaurants using touchpad menus on each table that can be switched to English. If you're looking for something a little bit more upmarket and with a bit of an atmosphere, I recommend heading back toward the temple and the Art Deco Fujiya Gohonjin. The building and its interior are striking, with the main restaurant looking onto a beautiful garden. For me, the real highlight of Fujiya Gohonjin is its bar and fantastic gin and whiskey menu. You need a booking to drink and dine there. However, they usually have English-speaking staff, and their website is easy to navigate and make a reservation. Again, links on the episode page. Finally, if you're searching for where to get a decent coffee in Nagano, check out the episode page for a link to my article about the best cafes and coffee in Nagano City. There's no shortage of accommodation in Nagano City, most of which are Western-style business hotels ranging from mid-range to budget. The greatest concentration of hotels is in and around the station. To the best of my knowledge, there are no high-end hotels in central Nagano City at this time. When searching for accommodation, search Nagano Station to bring up options in the closest proximity to it. If you simply search Nagano, booking sites will likely bring up options across the prefecture and perhaps well outside of Nagano City. Hotels near the station are usually well-priced and by far the most convenient option. The other option when visiting Nagano City is to stay around the temple, around 20 minutes walk or under 10 minutes by a bus or taxi from the station, at one of the many shukubo or temple lodgings around Zenkoji. These are Japanese-style traditional inns with on-floor futon bedding, tatami matting, and low furniture. The quality varies, with some very nice options available, and staying in one offers visitors further insight into the practices of the temple, including easy access to the morning service. However, it's worth checking the details prior to booking, as some, if not most, have shared toilet and bathing facilities for guests, early dinner services, and they may have a curfew. Finally, as far as I know, there's only one onsen, that's natural hot spring in Nagano City, open daily. Oroikan operates from 6 to 9 a.m. and then from 10 a.m. to 11 at night. Entry costs 800 yen for adults, with bars segregated into men's and women's, including multiple indoor bars, a large outdoor bath, and saunas for both. Ruikan has a policy of no tattoos. If you're able to cover up your tattoo, you shouldn't have a problem. However, if that's not possible, unfortunately, this isn't the onsen for you. There's a cheap and decent restaurant on the second floor, open daily from 11 a.m. to 8:30 at night, serving the usual staples, ramen, katsudon, soba, cold beers. It's a 20 to 25 minute walk from Nagano Station, or very conveniently, they also operate a free shuttle bus to and from the Metropolitan Hotel outside the station Zenkoji exit. Nagano Station is a stop on the Hokuriku Shinkansen line running from Tokyo to Kanazawa, making Nagano City a very easy destination to get to. All services departing Tokyo stop at Nagano, an 80 to 110 minute journey depending on which service you choose. There are plenty of services throughout the day. From Kanazawa, the northern terminus of the Hokuriku Shinkansen line, services take between 60 to 90 minutes and are just as frequent. For visitors heading to Nagano from Nagoya, limited express services take around 3 hours running along the scenic Shinano line from Nagoya Station to Nagano Station. And for anyone heading to Nagano from Kyoto, Osaka, you actually have three options by train, all of which take around 4 hours. You can make the journey using the Tokaido Shinkansen to Tokyo and then switching to the Hokuriku Shinkansen. Alternatively, you can take the limited express Thunderbird from Osaka or Kyoto to Kanazawa and then switching on the Hokuriku Shinkansen for the journey to Nagano. Or yet another option is to take the Tokaido Shinkansen from Osaka or Kyoto to Nagoya and switch to the limited express service on the Shinano line bound for Nagano. As I said, all three options take around 4 hours and all are covered by the Japan Rail Pass. If you're traveling on a budget or just fancy not using the train, Japan also has a fantastic setup of express and overnight bus services, including those that reach Nagano from other major cities. The services are cheap, clean, and convenient. Different companies operate to and from Nagano with daily services. A Google search should bring up some good options. It really is all too easy to get to Nagano. There's no excuse not to come. It's a gateway to the snow country. And I hope that this episode has made clear there are reasons to visit Nagano City in its own right. That's it for today's episode. I hope it's piqued your interest in visiting Nagano City. As mentioned, I guide in Nagano all year round, so should you be interested, don't hesitate to get in touch about one of my listed private tours or inquire about a fully customized tour with me. Regardless of how you choose to travel here, I hope you enjoy it. Thanks to everyone who is listening. If you're enjoying, haven't already done so, please, please take the time to subscribe to, review, and share the podcast. You can also follow the show on Instagram, Facebook, and X by searching Snow Country Stories Japan. The website is snowcountrystories.com and includes a page for each episode of the podcast, information about my services as a guide and writer, and a little more information about me. My name is Peter Carnell. This has been Snow Country Stories Japan. I'll be back with the next episode in a couple of weeks' time. Until then, it's bye for now.